the hardest thing to do is to ask for
Right.
help because it's seen as weakness. And in reality, it is the biggest sign of strength in the world because it is the biggest and most courageous thing you can do is to actually ask another human for help.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Hello, hello, good morning, everyone. This is Carla once again for another episode of None of Your Business. So to all of our business owners out here who are listening, you're in for a treat today. Today, we're going to talk about authenticity, the journey towards sobriety, and all the other things in the fringes. So personally, I've had a great experience just really cutting back alcohol in my life. Last year, I think starting last year, whereas before when I would look at like my Facebook memories, I would always have a drink. And then during the pandemic, I really got into like the gin and tonic train. And then I would not have a day where I would not drink at least, I would know, five gin and tonics. And it was not a good time of my life. You know, everyone was sad. It was the pandemic. And so I'm really excited to have this conversation. With me today is a very impressive guy, and I would actually honestly consider him a role model. He is a successful owner of multiple businesses. He's the owner and CEO of D&M Roofing and Siding in Omaha, Nebraska. And also they have a team and an office in Houston, Texas. Eric is the co-founder of Roofers in Recovery, a nonprofit that sends people with addiction to treatment centers to get the help that they need. He is also the author of two books on residential and commercial roofing. Aside from that, he also hosts a podcast called The Authentic or GTFO. He is a keynote speaker and has spoken at D2D Con and SRC Summit. This year, Eric has a main stage keynote at RoofCon, and he also has his own keynote where he teaches leadership and helps companies build a cult-like following with their business by using the team method. Aside from that, Eric is a father, a diver, and a golfer. And this is a man who is dedicated to helping others by sharing his personal journey. Ladies and gentlemen, Eric Oberamt. Hi, Eric.
Good job. Great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I love reading your bio because it just shows how a lot of business owners and business founders are so multifaceted, right? What is your favorite part of your life?
Wow, that's a great question. I wouldn't say that I have a favorite part. I think my favorite part is whatever I'm doing in that moment, right? Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I talk about a lot is that balance isn't a real thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's not real. And so what I talk about a lot is the fact that whatever it is that we're doing in that moment, if I'm spending time with my family, then in that moment, that's the most important thing, right? And that's my favorite thing. Now, it's not about quantity, it's about quality. So if I'm in my business in that moment, then I love doing that. Because if I don't, then I need to get out of it and do something else, right? Because that's the only way that I can keep centered, right, as a human. But as far as like what's the most rewarding, is getting an opportunity to help people, whether it's in the recovery space or it's, you know, talking on the podcast and reaching people that have went through some stuff that they don't know how to get through. and I get those DMs and those messages of like, oh my God, I went through exactly what you went through, blah, 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 blah. And, mm-hmm. and finding that connection, that's the most rewarding thing outside of my family is being able to help those people, whether it's finding a path to recovery or getting through whatever struggle it is that they're going through, because I lived that.
Right. I think there's definitely something to be learned from just wanting to help others, and even though no one asked you, you know what I mean? Like the fact that you have actively taken, you know, a step to start a nonprofit, even get this thing organized, you know, it's not easy. No one asked you to do it. But it's such a great gift that you're giving to so many people, especially the people in your industry, right? So we're going to talk about that later. But it's very interesting how you picked this nonprofit or this initiative. Can you share with us your personal journey of sobriety and how that has influenced your experience as an entrepreneur or as a founder?
Yeah, for sure. So mm-hmm. I was the typical, you know, kid. I started drinking at an early age. I mm-hmm. think I had my first drink in like seventh grade. But to me that was normal, right? Like it was just the guys that I hung out with, like we'd steal parents' liquor cabinet and, you know, try it that night and throw up in the corner and whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, it was, you know, I was in high school, college, and, you know, you partied and it's the same stories that a million people have told. And, you know, I didn't really get in a whole lot of trouble, but it was what it was. As I started getting older though, I started getting consequences, right? I started getting charges. I started getting DUIs. I started realizing that, I mean, I was drinking probably every day. Then in about 2008, went through traumatic experience, and I was drinking every day, drinking every night, but then I started doing large amounts of cocaine. Oh. And once I started dabbling into that, but I was also an entrepreneur, mind you. So mm-hmm. I paid retail for Coke once. And I was like, that's really expensive. I was like, can I just buy a lot of it and then sell it to my friends? And they're like, sure you can, Eric, you can do that. And so I would buy large amounts because I always felt like I needed to have that so that people would surround themselves around me. Oh. So I was very introverted, hide in the corner, wouldn't talk to people, but booze and drugs gave me the opportunity to be able to what I thought was an opportunity to connect with other people. Well, in reality, it was just, you know, it was me being insecure, and I didn't feel like anybody would want to spend time with me if I didn't have drugs and booze to be able to give them or sell them. So that led me down a path of selling drugs. And around 2009, end of 2009, I got popped for my fourth offense, felony DUI. Mm-hmm. And I got pulled over. I had been partying all day, mm-hmm. and it was probably 3 o'clock in the morning. And I got pulled over, and I had been selling drugs all day. And I was the guy that sold drugs on the honor system. And so what that means is I would take 10 teeners, and a teener's about $100 worth of Coke. And I would have 10 teeners packed up, and I'd put them in my middle console of my truck. And people would call me and say, hey, where are you at? Or text me, say, where are you at? I'd give them an address. They'd drive by the party that I was at. They'd open up my truck. Or I'd unlock it, they'd open up my truck, they'd take a teener and leave $100, right? So I'm driving home that night, that next morning, and I get pulled over. Cop pulls me over, does all the sobriety tests. Obviously, I fail. He pats me down and does not find the 2 8-balls that I had in my pocket, in my cargo pocket, right? Mm-hmm. So right there, that's a huge charge, right? Mm-hmm. He then goes and searches my truck and comes back to the cop car and goes, hey, do you want this $1,000? And I was like, $1,000? I was like, oh shit, I sold all my Coke. Like, I didn't even know. Like, I didn't say it out loud, right? But like in my head, I was like, oh shit, I sold all my Coke. And so I dodged another charge there. Mm-hmm. And he's taking me to the precinct, and I'm like, what am I going to do with this Coke that I have in my cargo pocket, because if they introduce me into jail, which they're going to do, right, and they undress you and they find it, I'm going to get slapped with another charge, right? Introducing contraband and cocaine into the jail. So I get him to let me go to the bathroom before they book me, and I'm able to flush it as he turns his head. He literally turned his head for 2 seconds. I pull out the 2 8-balls. I drop them in the toilet, flush, and turn around and go, all right, I'm good. Go ahead and book me. So, I mean, I was looking at decades in jail for like all of that cocaine plus a fourth offense felony DUI. So I get charged with a fourth offense felony DUI, and I'm looking at 1 to 5 years in prison just for that alone. Mm-hmm. And my lawyer, who was actually a buddy of mine that I've drank into drugs with, was like, hey man, like you need to go to treatment. And I was like, why? He goes, cause you're looking at 1 to 5 in prison. He's like, this is the only way that you might get some sympathy when we go in front of this judge. I was like, okay, well, I can do math, and 30 days in treatment is less than 1 to 5 years in prison. So like, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
And I go to treatment, and for the first 2 weeks, I had no desire to be there. I was still selling drugs over the phone because I had drugs left over at my house, and I had other people selling them for me, entrepreneur. And something happened at that 2 week mark. And I remember I was sitting in a lecture, and I was looking out the window, and I looked at all the plates and cups and stuff that were on the wall. You'd get like little cups and stuff when you come back for your sobriety birthdays and whatever. And audibly out loud, I went, holy shit, I'm in rehab.
Oh.
And the whole room just stopped, like, what's up with this crazy guy? You know what I mean? Like just blurting this out. And I had this epiphany that like normal people don't have to go to rehab. If I'm right. sitting in rehab, maybe I've got some issues that I need to actually take a moment to look in the mirror and go, what do you need to fix about you? Right.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, I was 310 pounds, out of shape, big fat head, fat. Like I was just a waste of a human, right? I wasn't fulfilling any type of potential. I wasn't doing anything. And I came home from treatment and I decided to make a change in my life. And so I've been sober since January of 2010. So I've been sober for a little over 13 years. And that was what ended up parlaying into the nonprofit, because my buddy and I both went to treatment, and we both know that we probably would not be sober if we hadn't went to treatment. All the stuff that came after that was just as important. All the steps we took and the, you know, groups that we're in and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we both needed that kickstart in recovery and to go to a treatment center. And so that's why we think it's so important. And so that's why our nonprofit raises money to send people to treatment inside of our industry.
Wow. What a story. So you spent zero jail time or prison time?
No, I got 90 days. Mm-hmm. I ended up getting the minimum. I got very, very fortunate. I got 90 right. days in jail, which was a hell of an experience, right? Like I don't have the prison experience, you know, that some other folks do, thank God. But I've got the you know, correctional facility in jail. And that was very eye-opening. It you know, a lot of people go into that and they come out one of two ways. One, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to never go back to this awful place. Or B, I mean, that's just how I live, and that's just how it's going to be for the rest of my life, in and out, in and out, in and out, right? And I took the, I'm never, like, that's not me. That's not who I am. I was destined for better things than this. Right. I'm going to figure out how to get out of this cycle that I'm in.
Yeah. So it's great, because you definitely took the right step of like, this person I'm seeing in the mirror, this is not me. This is my rock bottom. And that's my decision. It's going to be uphill from here. I'm going to get out and be better. However, that is an experience that we don't want people to have, right? So that they can turn their lives around. What do you think are the ways that people catch themselves before they have to get to rock bottom, or before they have to like have that epiphany and that crazy experience that you have, just so they can change some of their damaging behaviors?
Yeah, I mean, it's very simple, but it's not easy, mm-hmm. right? Because you have two choices. You either have to be a very self-aware person, mm-hmm. which is not easy, right? It's simple, but it means you have to take the time to shut up and listen to people.
Right.
Right? Stop talking so much. Stop talking so much and thinking that you know everything, and listen to people that have come before you and have made mistakes. I do some coaching and things like that. I have never taught anybody anything based off of my wins. Nobody gives a shit about my wins, right? What they care about or what they're going to get the best lesson from are my losses. So if you're one of those people that you're maintaining and you haven't had to have a rock bottom moment before, take the time to listen to other people that have went through exactly what you're going through in the moment so that you don't have to do that. Now, that being said, there are just some of us that don't know how to do that. And we have to be hit in the head with a hammer seven times before we go, I don't like being hit in the head with a hammer. It hurts, right? And for whatever reason, there's people like me, and I know there's millions of me's out there, right? That have to be hit in the head with a hammer 100 times before we go, that's stupid. Stop doing that. And my message to those people is, when you're finally done being hit in the head with a hammer, realize that there's people out there that want to help you. And the hardest thing to do, and I'm speaking from my experience as a male, you know, and especially as like an alpha type male, the hardest thing to do is to ask for help, because it's seen as weakness. And in reality, it is the biggest sign of strength in the world, because it is the biggest and most courageous thing you can do is to actually ask another human for help. And those are the two things. You either have to be extremely self-aware, read a lot of books, get as much education as you can on how to be self-aware so that you can avoid those pitfalls. But if you don't happen to be one of those people, understand when you go through it or when you've went through it, that you have to ask for help.
Right. So also, you know, to everyone listening, you guys might be surprised how many people actually want to help and are actually willing to help, even strangers, right? Like even strangers, it could be, you know, a random, you don't know what kind of blessing you will get that day. You know, it could be a random thing that you're passing through on like your phone, like a motivational quote or a meme, or it could be a friend who's calling to check in with you and want to make sure that you're fine. So be self-aware, learn from others. Other people's mistakes is always the best way to learn, aside from, you know, you making the mistakes, and ask for help. So that's a good plan right there. And so when that happened, after that happened, you said you know, had great motivation to turn your life around, and you were able to do good things for yourself. How was that journey? Can you describe like the first 10 days to me?
Yeah, so I would definitely change a little bit of how you said that. I did not have motivation. I did not have motivation to get better necessarily. Maybe I stated that wrong. All I knew was that I didn't want to live like that anymore. But I didn't know what that meant or how to do that. So when I came home, and I'm just speaking from the recovery side, right? I had to go get plugged into a community. I had to get plugged into a community that understood what I was going through, right? So for me, that was Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went and found Alcoholics Anonymous, found a sponsor, started doing the steps, you know, learning all the things that I could, and put and surrounded myself with people that understood the path that I needed to be on, right? So like, let's not even talk about the first 10 days. Let's talk about the first year, right? The first year, I hid in my house because I was deathly afraid to go out, because all the people I knew were out at the bar, hanging out with my old friends. And I was deathly afraid of going into those environments because I didn't know how I was going to react, right? And so I hid. I went to meetings. I met with my sponsor. I tried to make new friends inside of that community. And what's really, really interesting on this point is that it correlates directly to business. Because what do we say in business when you're in a business life is you are the five people that you hang around with, right? If you hang out with, if you hang out with five millionaires, you'll be the sixth. But if you hang out with five poor people, you'll be the sixth. If you hang out with five people that are overweight and not healthy, you'll end up being the sixth, right? And vice versa. It's the same thing in recovery. If you don't hang out and spend time with the people that are doing what you want to do, you won't do it. So I had to find new playmates and new playgrounds to be able to facilitate that new life that I wanted. So that first year was really, really hard. And then things kind of started getting easier to accept after that.
Right. I love that. So what I got from that is it's kind of a mix of self-direction and having the right environment, right? So when you're, you know, earlier you talked about being self-aware, asking for help. And so being aware and asking for help is a decision that's coming from you, but there's also things outside of you that definitely help like accelerate this change that you're bringing into your life. So if we have listeners here who are trying to make a big change in their lives, all you need to do is have a lot of self-direction and have a, you know, prime yourself up for success. For me, my personal, the thing that I could really relate to is trying to be healthy, right? One of the things that I don't do right, obviously, I still crave, you know, some potato chips every now and then. They're good. But I try to not put them inside my house. So if I really want to, I will have to walk out and go to the 7-Eleven and get my potato chips. But the mere, the extra step, you know, gives me a little bit of a barrier to get to that bad habit, quote unquote. And so same thing, if I surround myself with fit people, if I read, you know, about fat loss or calorie deficit, right, do the right things for my body, then it's going to be the same thing. So like consistency, self-direction, and influence. I love that. And so when you started to, you know, get a little bit of success in this life change, and you're also building your business, how was networking? And did you ever feel like not drinking was a hurdle in social situations, meeting new people?
So my real experience with that was like back to that first year of being sober. The real hard part was like dating.
Oh, right? Interesting.
Because that was really, that was weird, right? Because what do? You go out for a drink, right? And so like, I would have to, like, I remember, I think I tried to pretend I was drinking something, right? Like you'd get a club soda and a lime and a rocks glass and be like, yeah, it's a vodka seven, right? But it wasn't. And I would pretend to be something else. And I did that for a while. And then what's funny is after an amount of time, and it's a different amount of time for everybody, I started to become this human that I am today, where I stopped pretending to be something that I wasn't. And then all of a sudden I didn't have to explain it because I wasn't ashamed of it. Right. And that's the difference, is because I'm not ashamed of who I am today and who I was. It's part of my story. It's part of my journey. And I don't give a shit what anybody else thinks about it at this point. Right now, people then ask me, because I act the way that I act like all the time. It's why the podcast is called Be Authentic or Get the Fuck Out. Because because in my mind, if you're not being authentic to who you are, and if you're trying to be somebody else, because we idolize all these people on social media so often now, right? Everybody's watching the Ed Milettes and the Gary V's and the Tony Robbins and the all these people. And all these people give amazing messages that we should emulate and that we should learn from. But then you start watching people that start to try to be them, right? And they try to, or they try to dress like them, or they try to talk like them, or they try to be something that they're not. My message now today is figure out who you are, be really okay with it. And if people aren't attracted to it, then they're not your people. Move on. There's plenty of people out there. I don't work with people that I don't align with, because there's plenty of people out there that do. And people get confused and they're like, well, what do you do when you go into a meeting and like, you don't want to lose that business? I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'll go find new business from somebody else. Yeah. Everybody is not my customer. Everybody is not my friend. Everybody is not somebody that I align with. I only have so much time and so much energy to be able to give out into the world. And I'm only going to allow the same energy mm-hmm. back into my life, right? And so once I was able to see that that was my path, everything got really easy. Everything got, well, easier. Everything got much easier after mm-hmm. that, because I didn't have to make excuses. I didn't have to lie. I didn't have to make shit up. I didn't have to pretend to be this other person. I got to just be me. I was like, yeah, I don't drink. I'm allergic to it. If I drink, I break out in handcuffs. You know, like I can't, right. It's just not what I do. And so if you have a problem with it, then we're probably not going to work out. So I'm going to move on. And then being okay with that, because I wasn't constantly getting my gratification from other people. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that angle actually, because it's not a strategy. It is a way of being. Yep. And that makes it more powerful. I listened to this random Jordan Peterson TikTok before, and he said that the root of depression is pretending to be someone else, pretending to feel a certain way, pretending Bingo. To, you know, doing things you don't want to do, like basically not being yourself. And that was, and that's why depressed is like, sounds like deep rest, because you just have to take a deep rest from all of these things that you're not, things that you don't want to do, things that you, people you don't want to see. You know, a lot of people, especially women, have very high people-pleasing tendencies. And I noticed that I consider myself outspoken, but I still catch myself having certain people-pleasing tendencies. And you know, I try to get over it. But like you said, you know, the very core of it is just being authentic, unapologetic of like who you are, and have people self-select if they want to be in your life or not.
Yeah.
So what, well, however radical your life choices are, people will just have to deal with it, right?
And it doesn't mean that we don't do wrong things from time to time, and we need to adjust how we operate or how we interact with people and whatever. Like, we always need to be growing and learning and being better, right? Uh-huh. But at the same time, just don't pretend. And when I stopped pretending, that was when things got free. Just stop pretending. That's that's just gross.
I know. You know what? We've all been there, right?
Yes, 100%. But just stop.
Validation.
This is one of those moments, though. Listen to somebody that's been doing some shit before you. Like, it's gross. Stop it.
Yeah, actually, and you'll see a lot of positive changes in your life. I noticed that also. You know, when I moved out of the States, I've taught myself how to live a simpler life. And, you know, eat more, like more pure, sleep deeper, do things that I love the most. I actually fired myself as my company CEO, because I'm like, I actually don't want to be doing this. I want love to do that. Something else. Yeah. So miraculously, as I got more inspiration and I've been doing things that I actually genuinely love in my company, money also started coming in a much more less stress way. And we've also fired certain clients that didn't align with us in terms of values, you know, and it was so much more empowering for my team as well. So I love that point that you had about dating, though, because that is a very special time in your life when you are torn between being okay with who you are, but also wanting someone to see how amazing you are. And so you're like, should I pretend, or, you know, how should I present myself so this person,
yeah,
so I can have this gift of a partnership?
I mean, that's a weird time, right? Like, right? I mean, it's a weird time. And especially if you're in your 30s, right? I was in my early 30s at that time after a divorce. Yeah. And so like, it's a really weird time to kind of relearn who you are. Right. And I know that there's millions of people that are going through that same thing, right? In their 30s, 40s, whatever it is, like almost reinventing themselves because they had this identity for so long of what they thought they were. Mm-hmm. And it's different now, right? Whether they went through some pain, some struggle, some whatever, and they're coming out this other side and they're like, wait a minute, who, what am I doing? Like,
yeah.
And then how do you communicate that to a new person that you're putting into your life? You know what I mean? Like that is, yeah. Like I'll tell you what, I don't want to do it again. I know that.
Yeah, that's right. So you met your partner at this very special time. And so, you got lucky and that's great. In terms of like building your business and how, you know, now, you know, you mentioned you're going through a specific change in your life, and then you're also dating, you're trying to find a lifetime partner, you're also growing a business. How did you stay focused on your entrepreneurial goals?
So back then in my early 30s, I was still working with my grandfather. So my grandfather started our company long, long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. I was working with him as a partner. Mm-hmm. But understand that the way that the business was structured then, mm-hmm. it was still, my grandpa was still like the controlling interest in the company. And I was kind of running the day-to-day stuff, but I was trying to direct us mm-hmm. like to a larger path, but like I could only do so much because I didn't control all the money. And like, as a business owner now, like we all understand, like if you don't have control of the money, you can't really do shit, right? All you can really mm-hmm. do is try to influence the person with the money, right? So I was steering us in a direction to grow, and we grew every year, but we had this really weird thing where my grandpa didn't hire people. So if you weren't, other than like crew members, right, on the roofing side. So if you weren't like in the family, mm-hmm. excuse me, if you weren't in the family, you didn't work in the business. Mm-hmm. So I had to wait until grandpa passed away. And when grandpa passed away, I took all the money that I saved up and buried in the back of the yard, which was not very much. Mm-hmm. And I went and bought a building. Mm-hmm. And wow. I got this smoking deal on a building, and I didn't even know why I was buying it, but I knew that I needed to buy it. Uh-huh. And I bought this building, and then I actually bought 5 buildings on like 2 acres in the middle of town. And I was like, okay, now what do I do with this building? Shit. And I was like, I'm like, I guess I fill it up with people. And so I started hiring for the things that I didn't want to do. But keep in mind, again, I didn't have that much money. So I had to be like, okay, I can fill one position. So I filled one position, and then we made a little bit more money. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go hire somebody else. And I hired somebody else, and I hired somebody else, and I hired somebody else. And then over the course of however many years, it grew into what it is now, where I actually get to be a CEO, and I get to run the company, and I get to work on the company and not in it anymore, right? Mm-hmm. But by the time I got to answer your question, sorry, but mm-hmm. to get to that point, I had 5 or 6 years under my belt where I had gotten clean, and I had this opportunity to get my shit together so that by the time I got to the point where it was all on me, my head was clean, right? And I knew the direction. Now, to back it up, I was so fortunate because I had somebody in my life that was willing to support me during those first 2 to 3 years that I had to figure out what was going on with me and who I was going to be, right? And that was my grandfather. And if it wasn't for him, I mean, he was my best friend. He was my dad. He was everything to me. Mm-hmm. And if I wouldn't have had him in my life, I honestly don't know what would have happened exactly. Right. And I think that goes back to the point of utilizing those people that are in your corner. Because if you don't have those people to be able to have those conversations with and somebody that's backing you up, it's going to make it significantly harder. So you need to reach out and find who those people are in your life, because everybody has somebody. Mm-hmm. You just might not know. You just might not know who it is right now. Right. Mm-hmm. But everybody has somebody that cares about what's happening to them.
Yeah. I love that. So it could be like a best friend, a partner, a spouse, right? A mother, a father.
It could be anybody.
Yeah. Could be anybody. Everybody has somebody. I love that. I love that, actually. I love that mindset, because it reminds you not just that you have help, but that you also have an opportunity to save someone's life. You could be that somebody to someone else.
You're supposed to.
I love that. Yeah.
Yes, you're supposed to. And if you're not that person now, then you do everything that you can so that one day you can be that person that can be somebody else's person. That's the whole point. And I didn't know that then. I just know that now. I know that everything that I went through and everything that my grandpa sacrificed to help me with mm-hmm. is what allowed me to become who I am today, which was a person that was able to help other people. 15 years ago, I couldn't help anybody. I was a pile of right. shit, right? Like I couldn't do anything. But everything that I went through got me to today. And today I am able to help. And that's who I was supposed to be. I was supposed to be that human. We're all supposed to be that human. There isn't one person on this planet that was born as a little baby mm-hmm. that was looked at and pointed at and said, your purpose is to be a piece of shit.
Right.
That isn't a thing, mm-hmm. right? The purpose of every human that's born is to eventually be of service in some way, right? Now you have to be helped in the beginning, but once you get that help and you figure things out, then your purpose is to help other people and so on and so forth. And such is the cycle of life. And millennia goes by and everybody helps everybody. That is the human race, right? You are not meant to be alone. We are a tribal people that need to be mm-hmm. around other people. We are not meant to be alone. We are meant to be around other people and then help others in need. That's just a fact. And anybody that disagrees with that is crazy.
No, I love that because honestly, the opposite of that is psychopathy, right? Like if you look at these like serial killer documentaries and see how they right. think, they actually think the opposite of that. They're like, no, humans don't have any value and I'll do whatever correct. I want. And yep. sometimes they would blame it on their mental illness, zero accountability. So you're either a psychopath or you're right. a human being that helps others.
Right.
Those yeah, are the no, only think, two
yeah,
options.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I wasn't accounting for psychopaths. So that's my fault, right? Like, I guess if you're born with a mental illness, then like, I guess you don't get to be on the same spectrum, but yes, you're correct.
Yeah. So, And you know, these people that help you out, that are willing to help you, can be helping you in your personal life and in your business. All you need to do is to really be open. So let's talk about your people. So you have a business in the roofing industry. Most of your audience are roofers or people that are curious or around, you know, the people in this industry, probably their family members. So with you choosing to help first roofers in recovery, the name of your nonprofit, can you tell us a little bit about alcohol or substance abuse in this industry? Because like someone like me, totally from a different industry or a different culture even, doesn't know anything about it.
So in the construction and roofing industry, well, okay, I'll go back. In the entire United States, mm-hmm. I think this is a stat. I don't know if it's the world or the United States, but I bet they're the same. That 8% of 8% of the population has a drug or alcohol substance abuse disorder.
Wow.
Okay. 8% in the construction and roofing industry, it's 17%.
Oh.
Right. So it's literally more than double when you get into the trades. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we saw this issue in the industry. And yes, it's with workers and installers and things like that. But what we really saw were guys that came in that were working at McDonald's, or they were a bartender the week before. Mm-hmm. And then they get a job in sales, in roofing mm-hmm. sales, and they get a storm in their area. And they went from making $23,000 a year, barely getting by, to they're making $130,000. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens when somebody that's used to making 20 grand make six figures? They don't know what to do with money. Mm-hmm. So they end up doing two things: buying dumb shit mm-hmm. and then putting stuff up their nose.
Mm.
That is generally what happens, because they're like, I can party. You know what I mean? Like they get to be the life of everything. And so what we found is most of the people that come to us are sales reps or owners that never had money and now have money and don't know what to do with it. We chose to help people in our industry specifically because there's so many people out there and so many organizations that do help people in recovery and drug addiction and alcoholics and things like that. But we were like, this industry gave us an opportunity that other industries wouldn't. I can't go be a doctor. I quit school in my third year of college because I couldn't find a parking space and I hated school. I hated professors. I hated people telling me what to do. Like, I am not a good student, right? Like, I got good grades, but like, I hate school. I hate it. But I knew that I could run a business and I knew that I could work with people and I knew that I could build teams and I knew that I could, you know, do all of those things. And this industry gave us so much and it gave us an opportunity that like, I don't necessarily deserve. And so we wanted to be able to give back to the people in our industry so that we could be very niche and specific to find those people to get the same opportunity that we got. Does that make sense?
I love that. Yeah. You're giving back to this community. You're giving back to this space that help you have a good life, have a source of livelihood, you know, support your children. I love that because I also believe that whatever success that you have in your business, you owe it to the industry, right? Like, for example, I'm in the outsourcing industry. Outsourcing has been around forever. That's why, you know, people outsource to the Philippines because these big companies in the States, they outsource to the Philippines. And so when, you know, when I was in college and I was seeing this, I was like, wow, that is such a great advancement of the industry. When I finally became part of that industry, I benefited from all of its trends, from all of its advances. We're probably one of the first few industries to get AI, as in to fully understand how it works, right? My team has been trained with AI 2 years ago or 3 years ago when Jasper came out. So that's a benefit of the industry. How are you giving back to the industry? I think that's also a great, like a mindful way instead of just, you know, giving is great, you know, if you support an orphanage or whatever, but I think giving back to your industry also has a special good karma.
I know. And I know the exact impact that I'm making.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. I know the exact impact that I'm making. I'm not just writing a check for $20,000 and saying, hope that works out. Right. I get to actually impact a human being. Yeah. And that's a different level of helping.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so rewarding for me.
Yeah, I believe that. And also, like, you can tell them that, you know, I'm just like you, but you didn't need to go through the stuff that I had to go through, even the jail thing, you know, the felony. Like, you really don't want this happening to you. So let me help you.
By the time they get to us, though, at least in the nonprofit, they've already went through a lot of that. So yeah, it's not usually people with high bottoms. We call them people with high bottoms don't generally end up in our purview. It's usually people that have pretty low bottoms, just like we did, because people don't generally ask for help with high bottoms. I meet people every once in a while in meetings and they were like, yeah, it didn't work out. And so I stopped drinking and I started coming to meetings. I'm like, Jesus, that's cute. Like, oh my God, you didn't like you didn't get into an accident. You didn't get the shit beat out of you. You didn't end up in jail. Like, you didn't fall down and crack your head with a bottle of tequila in your mouth. You know, like, I'm like, I don't know you. I don't understand you.
Yeah.
It's a different world. But most people, by the time they get to us, they've went through some stuff, right? My hope is that the people that are watching us from afar and like watching me and my social media content and podcast and all the other stuff that I do, those are the people that I hope see it and that they get to have the high bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, that's why I try to get as much information, as much content as I can out there, because I want those people to have the high bottom. The people that end up in Roofers in Recovery, they don't have high bottoms, right? Like, some bad shit happened to them.
Right.
But other people that are watching, like, and I don't even know who they are, right? They're not commenting.
Bystanders.
They're not liking. Yep, but they're watching. I know I've got thousands and thousands of those people that are just watching what I'm doing. And I hope that those people are the ones that figure it out and don't have to have the same experience that I do.
Yeah. And you know what? I was thinking while I was listening to you, your industry is predominantly male, right? Predominantly male, construction, roofing. So what you're really doing also, you know, aside from helping these people become better versions of themselves, is you're helping a home. These are the leaders of their households. And most of the time, they are also the breadwinners. They are role models to their children, right?
So our mission statement at Roofers in Recovery is to help put families back together.
Oh, I love that.
Because at the end of the day, the addict and the alcoholic is one person that affects hundreds.
Right.
Right. Because not only do they just affect their partner, their spouse at home, or right. their kids, but then they have people in their life that they're that are being affected, and then people in their life, and then when their kids have kids, like mm-hmm. it all goes down this long, long, long journey of people that mm-hmm. are affected because of this one person's addiction and this one person's alcoholism and the choices that they're making and the people mm-hmm. that they're affecting. And mm-hmm. so when we're able to help somebody get clean, and you don't always get to put your family back together, right? Like you don't mm-hmm. always get to get your wife back. You don't always mm-hmm. get to get your kids back right away. Mm-hmm. But if you can eventually put a family unit back together mm-hmm. where all of a sudden now Billy gets to co-parent. Now Billy gets right. to see his children and help raise his children, right? Maybe he doesn't get his wife back, but right. he gets to be in their life, right? The kids get to have a father again, right? right? Yeah. I mean, like that's an important thing, like on both sides. And you're right. It is a male dominated industry, but we've got women in roofers in recovery, you know, as well. We've got women owners, salespeople, things mm-hmm. like that, but it is probably 95%, you know, male dominated and it's male, like alpha, tough, mean, you know right. what I mean? Like, don't want to ask for help. Like we're right. all grew up in the trades and slinging a hammer. And you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I did the work until I was in my late 20s, right? Yeah. Like I was a mean dude with a tool belt and then getting drunk every night. So
yeah,
it's a different space for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a step to changing that. Like when you think of roofers, you know, tradesmen, people working in the oil rigs, and like one, if you ask me how to describe these guys from what mm-hmm. I know, I always think, oh yeah, they love drinking and they're probably in drugs. Truckers, yep. like they have like this reputation, right?
Yeah, drinking and fighting.
Yeah, drinking and fighting. And then somehow we're okay with this. And that's not okay. That's not okay. Right. And I think we have to also change that conversation to not expect that anymore and expect the opposite. Like, first of all, they're operating heavy machinery and, you know, their brain needs to be on point.
Correct. Yeah. So I'm actually writing, or I've written it, but I'm applying to do a TEDx talk on breaking the stigma of addiction in a blue collar industry.
I love that. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my next project that I'm working on, and to be able to show that those people are employable, right? Yeah. And not only are they employable, but they can be your best employees when you give them the tools to be able to succeed, and that you understand what they've gone through. Like so that's a big project, and we're filming a documentary right now at the same time that's called Dear Addict. And so we've been filming that for a year, and we've gotten a bunch of interviews that we're putting together, and we're hoping to have that done in about a year or two. It takes a really long time to film a movie, if you didn't know that. I didn't know that. And so like, it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, wow, that's great. So watch out for that. The name of the documentary is Dear Addict.
Yep. Dear Addict.
Okay. We'll watch out for that for sure. So make sure you follow Eric on social media. We'll share his links on the show notes, and of course we're going to share what he's working on. So right now, you know, Eric, what is your big dream for your advocacy for roofers in recovery, and what help do you need achieving it?
Great question. I mean, with any nonprofit, you know what we need? we need money.
Yes.
Right. We need money to help people. But you know, like big picture for me is I'm trying to grow even wider mm-hmm. on my reach. It's why I'm filming the doc. It's why every main stage keynote that I get, there's at least 10 minutes in there about recovery and addiction mm-hmm. so that people know that there's somewhere to go. I don't care if you're in the roofing industry, right? I don't care what you do for a living. You can still send me a message, right? Mm-hmm. Because I know people all over the country, everywhere, and I can get you plugged in with a community that can help you. It's not going to be me on the phone with you every night having a AA meeting, right? But I know people everywhere, and I can connect you and get you plugged in. And so that's why I'm filming the doc, because I want to reach this large population of people that mm-hmm. don't understand us, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm different than you. Mm-hmm. right? Like, and I can explain it till mm-hmm. And people that are listening that are like me, they mm-hmm. know exactly what I'm saying, right? But I am different than you, right? Mm-hmm. My experiences and the way that I'm affected by certain things is just totally different. It's just, I'm wired differently. My DNA is different. Like whatever it is, I'm different. And I want those people that know that they're different as well to know that there's somewhere to go, that there's someone to reach out to, and that somebody gives a shit.
Right. I love that. Everyone is somebody for everyone else. So we yep. all just gotta keep trucking and help each other out. And you are always either ahead or behind someone else, and, you know, take advantage of someone who's willing to help you reach out, you know, try to, you're not alone. Basically, you're not alone. And there's so many people that want to help you out. So I love that. I love that you are very mindful and you really, really have a strong sense of direction and a big mission. So that's yep. very inspiring. You know, aside from our business, I think these things honestly remind us that we're human and makes us feel great that we are alive. You know, being able to do these things and being able to pursue our personal advocacies, whether they come from personal experiences that have been negative or you are a recipient of the effect of this experience, as in addiction or abuse or, you know, things like that. So,
yep.
All right. So tell us, Eric, how can people find you? How can people follow your journey, invite you to speak, you know, maybe to a school or a big stage? I would love for more people to just hear your message and get in touch with you. And of course, Roofers in Recovery.
Yeah, so would I, by the way. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you on that. So I am very easy to find because nobody has my last name. So it's Oberempt, Oberempt, Oberembt. So Instagram, Oberempt, Facebook, all the social media platforms, whatever. Our podcast is also fully professionally filmed and on YouTube as well. All of our guests are in person. I either fly them in or I fly to them when we do interviews as well. And so reach out for that. There's a website that's ericoberempt.com or beauthenticorgtfo.com. It goes to the same place. You can book everything there as well. You can see all this stuff. But yeah, I love to get opportunities. We don't just talk about recovery, just so people know, you know, in the introduction, I'll just kind of close with, you mentioned that, you know, my keynote is about the team method and it's mm-hmm. about creating a cult-like following inside of your company. And so for the business owners out there, our big goal as business owners are to create a team environment that everybody wants to follow you and you don't have turnover. Right. Mm-hmm. And so how do you do that? And so we created what we call the team method, which mm-hmm. is teaching people how to instill trust, empathy, authenticity, and meaning into mm-hmm. their employees. And so that is what I speak on a lot in my keynotes, whether it's to business owners or in roofing conferences or outside of the industry, is teaching people how to instill that in their businesses, because that's how you make money. You make money in your business by getting your people to fully buy in to what you're doing and to what your mission is. Right. And that's how you do it. So that's the one business thing I'll say.
Well, thank you. It's so good to see all of your passions, everything that you're really, really passionate about and you're working on. It's very inspiring. So thank you so much, Eric. And to all of our listeners, I will link all of Eric's social media and website, and please check out Roofers in Recovery. They're doing something good to the world. If you have any friend that you would like to refer that needs help, please be open. Please feel free. You could be someone's blessing today, and it's a great gift to be able to do that. So thank you so much, Eric, once again, and thank you to everyone who's listening right now. See you next Monday for another episode of None of Your Business. So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions.
If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.